Support for KSJD's streaming comes from Osprey PAX, independent since 1974, setting the standard for creating and producing innovative, high-quality, caring equipment designed to inspire and ease your journey. Osprey PAX is committed to the local communities where it operates and to protecting the wild places its customers love to explore. For more information, visit OspreyPAX.com.
This is Canyon Chronicles, where we talk about archaeology, history, and the culture of this place. I'm Mike Woodrow, and I'll be your host. Today, we'll be talking with Pete Montaño. The Montaño family has a deep history in the Southwest. Pete descends from some of the first settlers in what would come to be known later as New Mexico and Southern Colorado. Pete's ancestors include one of 30 families in the village of Tomé, to be granted land by the Spanish Crown in 1739. That was 229,000 acres on the Rio Grande. By the late 19th century, the Montaño family had made it all the way into the Montezuma Valley and into Montezuma County, where they literally have left their mark for generations. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning.
Pete, let's start. How early did your family come into New Mexico?
Well, again, you know, the history through the land grant that traced us back. So that was around 1680 in that era.
So that 1680, and where did they come from?
They came from Spain, the northern part of Spain, a little blip on the map called Andorra there in the Pyrenees Mountains.
So in the Basque Country.
In the Basque Country, and that's where our last name, Montaño, meaning from the mountains, that's where it came from, an appropriate origin.
So when your folks, your first folks arrived, it was just during or just after or just before the Pueblo Revolt in 1680.
Right. We hit here at a kind of a, right in the middle of a battle, the Pueblo Revolt all along the Rio Grande Valley.
So when... In 92, 93, when the Spanish re-enter coming up the valley, all of the settlements, the Spanish settlements, are gone.
Yeah, most of them were burned and destroyed by the Pueblos and, you know, along with the Navajos and anyone else who happened to be around, the Comanches and all that.
Well, when starting with the Rio Grande Valley and ending up in Montezuma County by the 18th century, what route did you and others take to kind of move westward?
Well, I think we went more north into southern Colorado, the San Luis Valley, that area there. In New Mexico, it'd be Chama. And then we got up that far north and then started moving west. And it was mostly because of we were sheep herders. And there were a lot of sheep over in this part of the country, thousands and thousands. I think a lot of people that have moved here in the last 20, 30 years have no realization how many sheep there were in this area.
As I mentioned, the second half of the 19th century, your folks are here.
Right.
And how do you know so much about your family's history here?
Well, there's always a time where something clicks, and I remember when I was in probably 7, 8, 9 years old, and that time I would come up with my dad. Well, I was raised in Durango and into New Mexico, but we would come up to sheep camp, and I would come with my dad in a pickup truck, and we'd bounce along the roads up by Lone Cone, Groundhog, and looking for uncles, and then we'd find sheep camp, and then. That was all. That was a lot of fun. But then, you know, went to high school, went to college, left, got married, came back, and then once again, I was up in the mountains with a good friend of mine, Jim Mischke, and we were climbing around Dolores Peak, and got way up above Timberline. I think all of us around here enjoy that area above Timberline. Well, we got chased off the mountain by a hailstorm. And Jim hollers at me, Pete, your name is on this tree. And so I go over there, and sure enough, it says Montaño, Canjilon, New Mexico. I can't remember the first name. And then we start looking around, and there's another one. Then there's another one. And then I think back to those years and then some of the stories that my father would tell about that area. And suddenly it was something I needed to research more.
And in order to qualify as a legitimate heir for as part of the land grant, was there additional work you had to do or documentation you had to provide?
Yes, there's quite a bit. You needed to have the records that were kept that went all the way back to Spain whenever that land grant was. And then in the 60s, there was a big revolt in northern New Mexico. They wanted their land back. And then that didn't work out all well. We couldn't get back the land as national forest, and they ended up paying anyone who was 21 by 1968 would receive reparations.
This is Mike Woodrow. We're talking with Pete Montaño. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. We're back. This is Canyon Chronicles. I'm Mike Woodrow, and we're talking about the history and Spanish influence here in the southwest part of Colorado, southwest part of the United States. Pete, your family arrived here at about the time there's nothing left when the Spanish come back in. And they start moving westward. And you mentioned they start moving up into the San Luis Valley. What made it possible for, in this kind of unoccupied land, for these settlements and communities to begin to take shape?
Well, there was quite a bit that happened. You have to remember, at this point in time, this is getting to be the country of Mexico. Mexico had their independence in the 1830s. So we were all, we'd been speaking Spanish for a couple of centuries by then. And working with in conjunction with the Pueblo Indians, and I think that's where that Southwest culture came. And then that thing that happened in the 1860s, the Civil War.
You had mentioned to me about the role of the Jesuits in helping to create a structure that looked after the creation of new settlements, part of a missionary set of work. Was that important?
Well, it wasn't so much the Jesuits as it was the Franciscans.
I'm sorry,
The Franciscans were the ones who came back after everything got destroyed. And they came back with a different attitude, a different directive by the Pope to meld with the cultures that were already here. And I think that's one of the great things that they did. They were able to bring back the agricultural knowledge and share that with the Pueblo Indians along the Rio Grande. And they brought back fruit. They brought back apples, apple trees. I mean, I'm always amazed when I think of someone bringing rootstock, trees from Spain across the Atlantic Ocean, put it on wagons or donkey carts or whatever, and bring them across Mexico, bring them up the Rio Grande Valley, and plant them in New Mexico, and have them thrive. It's just a tremendous, I don't know, it's hard to explain, that horticultural component. And that was one of the big things that they did, is that the acequia system and how to grow in a arid climate.
Managing water and acequias and that kind of
thing.
Right. During that period of time, let's say up until the Civil War, life was pretty hard here.
You know, it was very stark, and there's a great book about that called Death Comes for the Archbishop by Willa Cather. And she's really able to describe the starkness of that country at that point in time.
So, eking out a living here, all of a sudden, the United States ends up in civil war, and there's fighting here in New Mexico in 1861, 1862.
You know, I think that's a lot of people in our area don't realize that the Civil War had a great impact upon us. And you can read about the battle at Glorieta Pass, some further south. And the reason it was so impactful is to remember, at that point in time, the Civil War, this was part of Mexico. They had a governor here. They had an army here. They had, you know, all the politicians, all that stuff, the tax collectors, everything like that was already here, was established, been here for decades after that. Well, whenever the Union soldiers come up, and then the Confederate soldiers come up, and they have these big battles, and they had two or three up and down there, but the pivotal one, I think, was Glorieta Pass. Well, what happened, the governor... it's really unclear, but probably the most common thought is he pined to go back to Oaxaca. So he packs up all of his wares, his family, all the soldiers, and they up and leave literally overnight. And they take all the soldiers with them, and they abandon all their citizens, which is my ancestors, mm-hmm. are left there with no, you know, with no government anymore. And so they're suddenly... They're gone, and all these English-speaking people come in, and they have the guns and the powder and everything else to take command.
Well, it sounds like chaos. What came out of what emerged to help your ancestors get through this period of time and come out the other side?
Well, there was a real strong faith there that was brought in, that melding with the Roman Catholic faith, the Pueblo Indians, and that gave rise. That gave a point for the penitente people to take control of the communities. Little towns like Hernandez, Canjilon, Chama, Terra Maria, up in the San Luis Valley at Romeo, so they were able to, organize. So they kept the records of births and weddings and deaths and baptisms and all the stuff that was done prior to that by the government.
And it must have been very difficult to make sense out of your experience at that time.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was because they really didn't know. They were really lost. But what really gave them a foothold was their faith and the culture that had been developed.
So that was, they not only were part of the expression of the faith in that series, but they also were like the Kiwanis. They kept things going in the cities and were a center for organization and some kind of structure.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the best ways to. To compare it is to the civic organizations that we have now, like the Kiwanis, the Elks, or what, you know, all these mm-hmm. guys, but the penitentes were able to do that, and they stepped in at a great time and were able to organize the communities.
What would you say was the most compelling? Reason for the spreading out of your ancestors into this wide area?
Well, I think one of the big things. Well, you know, obviously they had to go north. They couldn't go south because that was Mexico. And that time, whenever the governor left, the army left, created a tremendous amount of animosity between the people that were left in the Rio Grande Valley. And Mexico, and a lot of, and that went on for decades. I mean, even I remember that my aunts and uncles they had a little tartness in their voice whenever they had to use the word Mexico, because there was a lot of animosity.
Wow.
So they ended up having to move north.
Well, you talked earlier about many of the things that the Spanish brought, and the cuttings and the fruit trees. And about your family's continued presence here since the late 1600s.
Right.
Don't you have something in your yard, a special thing that helps remind you of this continuous existence?
I am so blessed, honored, so happy. In my yard is a little apple tree, and a little apple tree is a thunderbolt. And I was working with Jude Schoonemeyer, which a lot of our listeners will know, and we were chasing down some of these fruits, and there's an apple tree called a thunderbolt, and we were able to track it from Spain, Mexico, up the Rio Grande Valley, and we had this suspicion that there was some in Montezuma Valley, so we went hunting and hunting, and sure enough, we found one out on Canyon Road Am, a thunderbolt, old tree, and Jude was able to take some cuttings and grafts. And so there's some thunderbolts that have a lineage that goes back centuries, and I'm fortunate to have one in my yard, and it's a double fence to keep out those darn deer.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. If our readers would like to know more about some of the topics we've discussed, do you have a recommendation for them, resources?
Well, you know, I mentioned three books real fast. One of them I mentioned already, Death Comes from the Archbishop by Willa Cather, The Milagro Beanfield War, and Blood and Thunder is another great book.
We'll see if we can't get those references on our website. I want to thank our listeners today for sharing their time with us on Canyon Chronicles, and special thanks to our guest Pete Montano for this quick glimpse into Spanish life in the Southwest. We could have many more in-depth and fascinating conversations if time allowed. This is Mike Woodrow.
And this is Pete Montano.
There you go.